Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is... I hear quite a bit of noise in the background there. Okay, let's get started again. Today is Tuesday, December 3rd, 2013. My name is Sally Baptist. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Thank you for tuning in to our weekly edition of American Freedom Watch Radio with Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. Before we get started with the show, quick update, just to let people know, Blog Talk Radio has been doing some upgrades. Nothing to the extent of the Obamacare situation, but they have been doing some upgrades, and the chat room has been kind of acting up. And so when we see what's that, you know, we don't need to compare it quite to the mess that Obamacare's website is, but they have been making some changes. So if you had some problems, I apologize. It's just hopefully it's all going to get cleared up within 30 days, whatever it is. I haven't been given a timeline. I just know that they've been doing a lot of upgrades. And yesterday's show, we had problems with the chat room. And so just to kind of make a note, and I apologize. Now, my message of the day, before I hand this over to John and Tennille, today is the officially, you know, we are now officially into the Christmas season. And myself, I did not go shopping on Black Friday. I think people are too nuts out there. And I'm trying to really focus on what the season is about and what Christmas is about. But more importantly is that I want to make sure we actually remember what Christmas is and say Merry Christmas. I am not going to be politically correct. I'm not going to comply and say season's greetings or holidays. I am calling it what it is, like it is. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. Those, the atheists who don't like it, sorry, go pick another country if you don't want to hear it. This is freedom of speech and freedom of religion. The Islamists, the Muslims, if you don't like it, go find yourself another country. And the Marxists, you know, hey, if you don't like it, go someplace else. But I am tired of being given a gag order. I'm tired of the American people having to change to be something else. And not be allowed to say Christmas at Christmas time, you know. So I'm just out there letting you know, Merry Christmas, everybody. Let me be one of the first to say it, and I'm going to keep saying it. Keep Christ in Christmas. Merry Christmas. Have a happy holiday, too, if you want to, but Merry Christmas. On that note, I'll hand it over to you, John, and let's see. Yes, we do have Karen out there, too.
Well, hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. Well, we're right in the middle of Hanukkah, so at least that's a good one. And you are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, and on redstatetalkradio.com. Please join our show. Join our websites, agenda21today.com. SaveAmericaFoundation.com, PanhandlePatriots.com, KarenSchoen.com, and John, Merry Christmas to you.
Well, Merry Christmas, Karen. Merry Christmas, Sally. I'm glad to be with you guys. I am on the drilling rig, so you're liable to hear quite a bit of background noise, and I apologize for that in advance, and any time I can, I'll kind of put a mute button on it so that we can try to let the listeners hear without all the background.
Well, I have just left a wonderful group of people that put together a meet and greet for me in Jackson County so I can meet and talk to some of the people that are in our area, and it was very exciting to talk to everyone today and to find out what is going on. And you know what, John? They're all saying the same thing. Isn't that amazing? When I travel around the county and I ask people what's bothering them, you know what I get? Education, Obamacare, and regulations putting their jobs out of business. What a surprise.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like the American lexicon, huh? That's where the entire nation is, and I think that You know, we continue to witness this weekly rant by the president as he marches out, folks, and tries to give his apology for the failure of the website. But he doesn't go very far into speaking about the failure of what Obamacare has brought to Americans and all of the uncertainty about what our health insurance is going to look like. They definitely are not addressing the increase in cost to the American taxpayer and citizens that were probably very pleased with their policies that they had in advance of Obamacare. And he doesn't speak to that very often. He does march out folks every week that tell us how great it is for them, and I'm glad that it is working for some Americans. But I think that for the vast majority of us right now, that it's a huge failure. And education, good gosh, what can't we say about education? 45 states are confronted with the Common Core curriculum and Common Core standards being brought into their classrooms, the loss of local power, local control in the classroom. We have huge issues in America, work, jobs. 1 in 7 Americans receiving food stamps and totally reliant on the government for where they get their meals. So, yeah, Karen, I bet you're it's sad that that we all share these same concerns across the nation, because I don't think you can go anywhere where people and citizens, if you ask the questions, sometimes the order of impact and how it is impacting them in their lives changes. You know, a guy that's having to confront Common Core and education and might be right in the middle of that battle, education may be number one on his list, but eventually we'll get down through our list and we all share the same concerns, jobs, education, and what is this Obamacare going to do to all of us?
You're right, John. And you know what? It makes me feel good to see how focused the American people are, really, for the first time, because the issues that are affecting all of us are affecting all of us. And by coming together, that's the only way that we're going to be able to combat anything. If we don't come together as people, we are lost forever. And the fact that the same issues are bothering all of us gives us the opportunity to come together. And to me, that's the greatest force. Remember, united we stand. So it made me feel good. It makes me feel sad that this is happening, but it makes me feel good to know that people are beginning to understand. And you know what, John? I think Obamacare was a blessing in disguise, because nothing was more of a poke in the eye for a cold shower, a wake-up call for people to understand what socialism actually means, especially when the private sector has to bail out the government, and it is proven over and over again that the private sector was so much more able to control their websites, to control their businesses. Let's face it, folks, if there was a business was being run like Obamacare, it would be out of business.
Sure.
It would be a joke.
Absolutely.
Nobody would use
yeah.
it. Nobody would go back to a website over and over again to have to buy a product that they know in advance is bad. It's only because we
yeah.
are being forced to do that. And that's what socialism and communism is all about. It's not the ability of free will, it's the ability of government force. And this is the cry that we should be screaming about, and that is to get rid of these programs, these obsessive programs that inhibit every single thing that we do.
You know, Karen, the one thing too, when you look at private sector success with the building of websites, Amazon, I don't know how many millions of dollars that it cost Amazon to put their website together and get it up and going. eBay and the thousands and hundreds of thousands of shoppers on there every day. All of the things that you see in the private sector, if this would have been a private sector company, the one thing that I assure you is that when it was not operational, that people would have been brought in and fired. And that's what I'm screaming, okay, look, we will accept your failure if you hold someone accountable. Because in the private industry, you and I, if I don't perform my job, if I'm not here when I'm supposed to be scheduled to be on this drilling rig, guess what? I won't have a job. And if I get here and I fail to do the job that they've paid me for, the service that they paid me for, and folks, this website that they're talking about, they had 3 years to get it to function. And then they also had, what, $530 million?
So
it's ridiculous not for somebody to be fired.
I know, and I spoke to one gentleman, and he said if he had $5 million to do a website, that he would be, you know, he would be ready, willing, and able for $500 million to put together a stellar website that anybody could use at any time. And it wouldn't take them 3 years to do it. So this just is a perfect example of what is wrong with people who feel that the government is the answer. And this should be a perfect answer to know that the government is not the answer. That it is the private individual that is the answer. And nothing is more, I think, more in your face than this as an example. And this is an example that should be carried and talked about on a continual basis over and over and over again. And people should realize that, and that is what we should be all about.
So, Karen, so that we can start off on a good note and to make sure that folks understand. And I know that we oftentimes, because we've allowed it for ourselves, speak of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, and let's just make sure that we offer the absolute clarity to that. It's the Obamacare tax. It's the Affordable Care tax. This is a huge tax and burden on the American taxpayer. And young people, the outcry has not been heard yet from the young people, because there was a statistic today that I saw that I guess there's some 35 to 40% of them that have no knowledge about how it's going to affect them. They don't understand it. They haven't even taken the time to look at it because they just trust what's being spewed out in the media that it's broken. So, but when these young people who are going to be confronted with the absolute burden, if young people don't sign up and participate, it will be a total failure. It will become so expensive for the older citizens, which, trust me, older taxpayers are going to pay far more than their fair share for everyone's health care, but not like the burden that the young people are going to confront. They have to have more young people than old people because that's the scheme. That's the Ponzi scheme of this tax, and it's just like every other tax, Social Security tax. I don't care. It's a scheme, and it's a plan that says that the older people are going to pay for the health care for the indigent and the old. And when they recognize it, when they learn that, and they get the first bills for it, there's going to be an uprising. And that's what I think, and I guess that's what you were saying earlier. It's one of the best things that has happened to this patriotic movement that you and I have participated in for quite some time now, but I think we're getting some added members now.
You know what, John? I was talking to some kids as I am out and about campaigning. I was talking to some young people, and they are in sticker shock. But you know something? There's something else going on, too, an undercurrent also, and I hope people listen to Ezekiel Emanuel, because the Obamacare bill does not pay attention to babies under the age of 2, because Ezekiel Emanuel feels that they can be discounted, their health is not as important, and if they are that young and have distress, then they shouldn't live. And he also has a lot of the care for people who are over 75, So the focus of Obamacare follows true socialist tradition of ignoring the infants and ignoring the older people because their only focus is on those that are capable or will be capable of working. Remember, those that work for the state get from the state. If you don't work for the state, and if you're not healthy and able to work, you are expendable. And this bill really proves it. It proves their disdain for elderly, the infants. And that, to me, should be a red flag for everyone who even had a small idea that maybe socialism might be a good thing to understand it's not. It absolutely is not. So it is
Karen, those are groups that do not, just like you said, I mean, they don't contribute to the collective, and that's what we have to start referring to it as, and that's what, you know, our children are human collateral based on everything that the UN has in black and white and the way they refer to children. And the one thing about human collateral in the collective is if you're not participating and contributing, then you are useless. And you know, when they were laughed, patriots like our, you and I were laughed at, scoffed at by the media, you know, that, oh, there'll never be any possibility of a death panel. No, you won't need a death panel. It'll just be etched in stone. It'll be written down that if you're 75 years old or older and you have a chronic illness of any type that doesn't allow you to contribute, bye-bye. Bye-bye. They will stop and shut off your health care. Well, if I don't have health care and I can't be seen by a doctor or a physician, I'm diagnosed with any type or form of cancer, any type or form of long-term illness, and I can't receive the treatment and the care that I need, I fade away. I pass away. Then I'm no longer a burden on the collective. And that's what this is. This is pure out and out. We have talked, you and I, and we've given definitions to our listeners, socialism, fascism, Marxism, communism. And we have made the clear distinction that we are in a soft socialist society right now in America. And what now we're witnessing with the inaction of this tax and what this tax brings, what Common Core implements through the United Nations in this global globalization of education, what we're witnessing is the shift in the mood from socialism to communism. And we know that when this shift takes place, when they go ahead and they pull the mask off and they stop telling the lie and the truth is revealed to everyone, and that's what the sticker shock is about for young folks, and that's where the I think the ire and the anger will be, and hopefully they won't overreact in violence, but they will start to react and listen to the solutions that we offer them by electing people like Karen and electing constitutional conservatives and libertarian candidates across this nation, conservative constitutional Republicans. I don't care, but we have to vet and we have to elect candidates that share the restoration possibilities and the solutions that are out there for America. We don't have to continue down this path, and it, because violence will bring it about with ease. It makes it easy on them to fully implement the harsh reality of communism, and we do not want that. I mean, everything I see, people are astounded that the breakdown of morality in our society, you know, with the knockout game, the increase in violence and robberies, and trust me, folks, it's about people not having sustenance in their life. When I can't get a job and I'm relying on government for my meal, and then they cut back what I can have and how long my meals last me in a month, when all of those things start to overwhelm people, they're going to find ways, you know. So there's going to be increase in burglaries. There's going to be increase in violent crimes against someone that has something that someone might need. So that violence and any rioting or anything that takes place like that opens up a door to something that we really don't want, and that will give them free rein to fully implement the communist takeover of America.
Well, as we all know, if we have read a lot of studies correctly, the goal of socialism is communism. Don't forget that. Socialists allow individual ownership as long as they get their huge share. Communists, everything is owned and controlled by the state. How are they going to do that? They're going to do that with regulations as they systematically close businesses and force people into government-assisted programs. What my one of the things that I'm doing in District 5 is working on an economic development program, and we are working with small farmers because I believe that in order for our area to be successful, the people have to be successful, and we all need food. So the most important place to start with any program, I feel, is to look within our own communities and see what are the assets of our communities and work with those assets. Fortunately, in Florida, in the rural areas, we are surrounded by magnificent land that used to be great plush farmland. Today it is not, but tomorrow we are hoping that it will be, because that is where we need to be. We need to be productive again. We need to be buying American products, produce, anything. We need to go back to where we were successful. You know, John, it was so interesting, well, not interesting, horrifying, when I looked this morning and the statistics were in for the international placement of education. And America came in 37th. How many billions of trillions of dollars have we spent on education that we are coming in 37th? And you know what's not being looked at? What's not being looked at is, what are the kids learning? They're so concerned with where they learn, and they're so concerned with the positioning and the teachers, that nobody is paying attention to what the kids are learning. And obviously what they're learning is not acceptable. When I was a teacher, when you and I were in school, did you know that America was always, always, always in the top 10? Sometimes we came first. Sometimes we came in third. Sometimes we came in 10th. But we never came in 37th. So it's not money, folks. It is not money, no matter what the political flavor is. It is not money. And now I have started.
Yeah, and Karen, you know, to get to this status and to get to 33rd, and when we talk about money, it's not money that was just spent in 2013. We have continuously, since 1965, increased our education, federal education dollars, two states annually, every year since 1965. And we have every election, every four-year election since 1965, we have listened to the parties on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, implement their educational success programs, you know. And now under Race to the Top, 2010, Barack Obama's Race to the Top, and all of the dollars that he gave to all of the 45 states that accepted his garbage in the global UN agenda of Common Core, when we did that, what have we gained? We have gained nothing. We are still falling. We're backtracking. So I don't need any, you know, there's a huge effort in Louisiana right now, and we are going to fight the battle, and we're going to win, and we're going to defeat Common Core, regardless of what it looks like. If we have to raise the money and give the federal dollars back to the federal government that we took for Race to the Top, that's something that we're already speaking of, because we've got politicians say, well, we don't know where we'd find that money. Well, you tell us. We're the taxpayers, and I will pay you whatever. We have never in this nation, not ever, not one single time, refused to pay a tax that's associated with the education of our children. You find a politician that says, oh, no, the American people are against education funding for their children. You're not going to find it. It's not. That's not a fact. America is an exceptional people. We want the best always for our children. We have demanded it, and that's our expectation. We've been lied to. Every 4 years we get the same lie that someone's going to do something that's going to impact the education policy and the education of our children while education continues to decline, but yet we continue to fund broken programs that have not worked. And they haven't worked because they are not kept locally. We are not, you know what, when I ask a parent, okay, your child is in the fourth grade, when's the last time you saw a test? I want to, you know, you're telling me that your child's passing. What are they passing? Where's the test? Have you seen a test? What was it? What were the questions on the test? And I ask them, bring me one. I don't care what grade they're in. Bring me the test. Show me when they took these standards, LEAP, NEAP, I don't care, Common Core, whatever the test is in the standardization, bring me the test. Let me see the test. Have you as a parent seen the test? And they haven't. And they've accepted it. And we have to stop that. Because it's not working for us not to know what's going into the minds of our children. Our children are being dumbed down. And Karen, you and I probably know that better than any two folks on the radio, television, anywhere else, because we had the great fortune of meeting in Charlotte Isserby. And, you know, Charlotte is, to me, I guess she is the end-all, know-all of whistleblowers on education. You know, she brought to light all of this dumbing down and its intent, the fact that it was by design. So we know where it comes from, and yet we have to battle inside. You know, the battle I'm fighting right now in Louisiana is going to be harder with the teachers than the parents. I can get the parents to listen, but I can't get the teachers because they've unionized, and their union tells them what they need to think.
John?
Yeah.
The thing that we have to do with the teachers is have them understand that Common Core will erase their job. Now, how can I say that? if you look at the Common Core or you look at the Race to the Top grant, they are calling for what they call Teach for America teachers. Now, I went to school. I have a master's degree, and I have probably about 100 credits over my master's degree. I spent, if we figured it out, about 20, almost as long as my teaching career, going to school on continuing education programs to learn all about the different things that I needed to know to become a successful teacher and to give that knowledge to my students. How can a teacher with a 5-week training take over? And that's what Common Core will do. It eliminates teachers' jobs. It makes teachers into monitors. There is no interaction with the child. The teacher is a paper pusher who is just taking paper off of the computer, analyzing it, putting it back in the computer, and that's the job of the teacher. So for those teachers that think Common Core is wonderful, you are signing your own death warrant because your job will be eliminated and given to someone who is totally not qualified. Now, how does that make you feel as a parent?
And on that note, we do have your two guests who might want to be able to answer on that. So we have Neil and Pedro.
Oh, well, this is a real treat, John. Neil and Patra both had similar experiences, a little bit different, but very similar, both focusing around Walmart. So thank you very much for joining us, ladies. And yes, this fits in exactly with what Sally was talking about before, which was the elimination of Christmas. So, Patra, Manoj, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Neil Rice, it is always a pleasure. Ladies, we can't both talk at the same time, so we'll start off with Patra. Would you please tell everyone your experience in Walmart this holiday season?
Well, I live a single woman in the hills of Tennessee, a very isolated hermit-like lifestyle. And I book people for radio shows across the country, and I, you know, the only socialization I get is really going to Goodwill or to Walmart shopping, you know, this or to church on Sunday. That's about the only socialization I get. And I have a cavity. I have a dental problem, so I wasn't able to go out of state to see family because of my health problems and dental problems for Thanksgiving. So I was left to spend Thanksgiving alone because I really, with my tooth hurting, I really didn't feel like being around a lot of people. So I went to Walmart to get a rotisserie chicken, and I was going to, you know, try to chew it very slowly because it hurts to eat because I got nerve pain. And I went to Walmart, and I have been hearing about the Black Friday event for a week at least, maybe 10 days. Everywhere I went was Black Friday, Black Friday, Black Friday, Black Friday. It's like Twilight Zone, da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. And I'm thinking, usually when I hear something over and over repetitively like that, it's God's way of bringing it to my attention for a reason, to alert me or to warn me about something. So I had this really bad feeling about it, and I was praying that nothing would happen anywhere in the country, that nobody would get hurt or harmed on that event. So when I walked in there Thursday afternoon, probably about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they were preparing to launch the Black Friday thing on Thursday at like 4 to 8 and then 8 to 12. And when I walked in, there were these guys handing out, distributing papers, and I said, what's on those papers? And it said at the top, you know, Black Friday. I'm like, ugh, I don't want one of these. I said, I've been hearing this for like a week to 10 days. I don't have a good feeling about this whole thing. You know, y'all just be extra cautious, be extra careful, and, you know, and like that. So they went on and said the same thing to a floor manager that I've seen for probably 16 years. I said the same thing to her, essentially. And I said a couple political things. I won't really go into what they were, but I didn't mention any kind of party. I didn't mention anybody's name. But I just said there are some things that are happening that I think so-and-so is implicated with some of these things that are happening in our country so much. And I left it at that. I didn't get specific. And I was just, for a few seconds, these blurbs about that, and said, please exercise extra caution for these events that you're having with Black Friday. And then I went in, I saw another guy, and I said the same thing to him, and he agreed with me about what I had said politically. He was in consensus with me, agreeing with me about what I said, and he agreed twice. He affirmed that he agreed, and I know what you're talking about. He said, yes, I agree with what you're saying. And then I saw another guy, and I said essentially the same thing to him in like 30 seconds. You know, it was a very quick exchange. I said very little, and I told him to look at a particular military website. This person I've been booking, a retired colonel, for like 2 years. And I told him to check out his website, and he could find out a lot of political information about what's going on in our country and on the home front. And he said, yeah, sure, I'll check it out. Well, no sooner than he said he'd check it out and smiled at me, just like 3 minutes later, the assistant manager was in my face. She came out of nowhere with him, you know, behind her. And she came up to me, and she looked at me, and she says, you have been talking to my staff about so-and-so. She says, you have to leave the Walmart store immediately. I said, I haven't done anything. She said, you have to leave the store immediately. She treated me like I was the T-word, the terrorist. She treated me like I had a bomb in my back pocket. I couldn't believe it, and I was just in total shock. I've been going to that store for 16 years. You know, it's like your living room with your friends, you know. And I had talked politics there for 3 or 4 years with another lady that works there, you know, 20, 30 minutes each time I'd visit her. Visit her in the store, and we talked politics all the time there, and it had never been a moot point with anybody. And so she and this other guy walked me briskly from the front side, far side, right side of the store, briskly, like it was an urgency that I get out of there immediately, like they're evacuating for a fire. They walked me so briskly toward the front of the store where the cashiers were, and there's probably like 13 different cashiers up there. At that point, she grabbed my arm and wouldn't let go of my arm and was trying to escort me toward the front door, forcibly. And that's when I yelled and raised my voice so everybody could hear that the cash registers that were checking out, and I told her to let go of my damn arm or that I was going to sue Walmart. And I said, I'm almost 60 years old, I know where the door is, and I know how to walk out the door, so let go of my arm. And I told her I was not the enemy, but I told her who was the enemy. And I told her they had been infiltrated. I said, oh, no, Walmart's been infiltrated. And so anyway, that's what happened. And I left and ate my Thanksgiving dinner at Wendy's. I had a burger at Wendy's and a chocolate shake, and I didn't have a rotisserie chicken. So I was traumatized from that and deeply disturbed that would happen where I live for, you know, I've been in Tennessee 18 years and out here for 16. And I thought that they could respond in such a volatile fashion, like I was all of a sudden an instant enemy when I was trying to be a watchman on the wall, you know, and showing concern. I was calm. I was lucid. I was not combative. I wasn't belligerent. I was calm, and I was trying to just warn them, but it incited fear. And the manager called last night of the store and talked to me at great length, the new manager, a new one. She says all these other assistant managers and stuff were expressed concern. They were fearful because of what I said. And incited fear in all these people. So apparently they don't have a clue what's going on in the country to be that fearful.
Well, I would think you're absolutely right on that one, and that is a big problem that we have. Neil had a different but kind of similar Walmart experience, also focusing on Christmas. Neil, would you
like
to share?
Yeah, hi guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yay, Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks, John, everybody. A couple of days ago, a couple of ladies that volunteer for the Salvation Army here in Cary, Florida, and been doing it for a number of years, they called
me
and let me know that they were not allowed, when they're out there ringing the bell and collecting money and helping everyone for Christmas, that they were not allowed to play Christmas music anymore. Yeah.
Neil, excuse me. There's an awful lot of noise in the background. I'm not sure what it is, but we can barely hear you because of the other background noise. If anybody else is, is there something else going on?
Let me try and mute my phone. I just walked outside, so let's try that.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, Neil, but nobody could understand.
No,
okay,
you're quite all right.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, as I was saying, these two ladies called that volunteer many years with the Salvation Army to help the needy and other people at Christmas. We're told they can no longer play Christmas music while they were outside ringing the bell. And I thought that was just disgusting. I'm tired of people trying to eliminate Christmas. I'm just over it, period. And so I said, well, let me look into it. And I called my Walmart store, and of course the manager, she was very nice, and she more or less denied any of this and everything. And as we kept talking, because we had a good conversation on it, and then she more or less came out and admitted that, yes, that's what it was. And she said, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. I said, no. I said, you don't need to be sorry the way I feel. I said, I feel sorry for you because I will no longer walk into your store for anything anymore. And then I did call Walmart headquarters, and I talked to a gentleman. Nobody will give me an answer. It's a complete runaround, so either I'm not talking to the right person, or I am, and they're just trying to get rid of me. But regardless,
well, it may
I will
be,
never.
Neil, you know, I'm going to offer you a possibility, and I think that this will fit in both situations. Give a lot clearer understanding of what I think, and this is just my opinion, and then I want you to lay this. If our nation breaks down economically, and we have to have, right now, one in seven Americans is reliant on the government for everything that they eat. And if a continuous breakdown or any further economic collapse occurs, if you had to, as the government, find some location in every city that would fit as a nice distribution center for the government handouts. What would be a better place than Walmart? Who is more associated with and taking in every day, every single day in America, Walmart takes in more EPT credits than any other business every single day. Yeah. Walmart functions and works at the behest, I believe, of the federal government, knowing full well that if there's if anyone that has seen any actions by FEMA, whether it's for a natural disaster like a hurricane, Katrina, Rita, all of the hurricanes, and then if you'll go back and you think, okay, Walmart stores, as far as the grocery section of them, were emptied just in a matter of hours. But then when things were distributed, where did FEMA go in the cities to distribute water, food, supplies? Walmart. Do you think that there's a possibility that they're already starting to work in unison with the federal government, because they've already partnered with them in the past? And those are facts, folks. I mean, you can't run from things that you see. And I throw that out to people all the time. What a better distribution center than a Walmart. Just look at the way the Walmart stores are laid out, and then go back and look at pictures of the distribution centers and how things are laid out in communist nations. They meet the design. They meet the full implementation of government distribution of everything that you need. It'll be going through
John,
your Walmart.
That is an incredible theory, and I agree with you. I never thought of that. That is fabulous.
I'd like to throw something
in
here.
That's a new one on me. Wow. But you are absolutely right. That is absolutely incredible.
Karen, there's a video on YouTube
I saw
a couple months ago, and I don't remember the name of it, but I probably could find the name of it somewhere. I might have written the name down. And there were a couple of gentlemen that were narrating the video, and they were talking about Walmart. And they said that FEMA had a lot of buildings or something that they thought FEMA was going to use that were behind some Walmart. I don't remember what state it was in, but there were all these storage buildings, just rows and rows and rows and rows of storage buildings that they felt like FEMA was going to use if there was some kind of disaster, that were behind this Walmart. And they were speculating, well, we wonder what's really in those storehouses. You know, is it food or is it something else that we don't know that's in there, you know? So they were very suspicious, these gentlemen that did the video, and they showed the pictures of the storage buildings behind the Walmart. There were tons of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that would make a lot of sense. Just like, think about the EBT cards. Think about the profitability right now of the banks. And what do we have?
Uh-huh.
And Walmart sells all kinds of stuff from China.
Major money. Why? Yep. Think about the increase in all of the assistance programs all coming in on the EBT cards, who all have to do transactions and get transaction fees from all of these cards. So essentially, Obama has partnered with the banks, with the corporations, just like Walmart, and we are suffering the results.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Walmart case is an easy one to make when you start to look at how Walmart shifted, just the way that we buy groceries, the way that we go in and we shop. You know, when you think about, I guess I go back to Safeway or any of the national food stores chains and how they did business, and the vast variety of things and products. You know, you didn't have one choice. You had multiple choices. And what is it that you go into Walmart now and you see very limited choices and the great value packaging, you know, very plain packaging that looks just like it would be? Because if you can remember, and I guess I don't know whether it was fortunate or misfortunate, but I had family members that had to go get commodities back in the day, and that was the government assistance. And once a month they would go get their commodities. And the first time I saw a great value packaging in Walmart, I thought about how man, you know, that's packaged just like the old commodities used to be packaged. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, you know. Is this what they're preparing us for? You know, here, this is what you're going to have. This is, you know, and you go to the manager of the Walmart and you say, you know, you used to carry community coffee and now you no longer carry that anymore. Is there any way that, you know, what happened? You know, what is it? Well, that's not our choice. That comes from Arkansas. That comes from the heads. Well, okay, that's fine. But the bottom line is your choice is gone, you know, and you just accept it. And you go back and you say, well, I guess this one will work just as good. And we've become accepting of it. And it isolates choice, just like our children in school.
I mean, just to me, that's great, John. That is absolutely right. It's not just our choices on the grocery shelf. It's our choices of everything. What are the things that we used to have, the brands that used to be around? What made competition was the amount of choices. And those that were fantastic rose to the top. They could even charge a little more because people didn't mind paying more for the quality. What do we have now? Minimal choices, same high prices, shrinking product sizes. That one was a big sticker shock. Take out some of your old recipes, and it will say a can of. I was making pumpkin pie, a can of evaporated milk, which was 16 ounces. Well, I challenge anybody to go find a 16-ounce can of evaporated
milk.
Because it seems as though our pound is no longer 16 ounces. When did that change?
No, because it's a lie, see, and they've perpetrated the lie, and we've never even, the ignorant, dumbed-down American citizens have not paid attention and have not made that connection, you know, and they're paying a greater price for a 15-ounce can. But what would it be, and what would be the price, and here's why they had to change the packaging. Because people would have, the light would have come on. If they would have continued to charge us a 16-ounce price, we'd have said, man, these food costs have gone through the roof. Instead of being honest and doing that, they just cut back the package size. So now the price is somewhat equivalent, just a little higher, but somewhat equivalent. It's all a lie. They're lying to us.
Guess what they can say as a result of that? We don't have inflation.
Mm-hmm.
What
exactly.
The
exactly.
Of our dollar is all about.
Hey, guys. Guess what else disappeared from Walmart? I was in there probably 2 months ago, and a guy came in there wanting Krispy Kreme donuts, and he asked one of the stock clerks, the guy that worked there, and they searched, and the guy looked, and he checked, and the Krispy Kreme donuts had been eliminated from Walmart here, where I live. Some other generic
brand. A nice
brand,
private free market company.
Walmart brand or something, but not Krispy Kreme. Krispy Kreme was done in.
Yeah. And here's the deal about Krispy Kreme, because trust me, if the corporate people would come out, and I don't know how they get them to keep their mouths shut, but I promise you Walmart contacted them and said, look, here's the opportunity we're going to give you. You can allow us to package your product, and we'll put your product in this size package, and continue to sell it through our stores, but it'll be done through the Great Value brand. And you either accept it or you take your product out of our stores. So they're strong-arming them. It is jackbooted. They're jackbooted thugs. And the government and the people inside, because trust me, there's a partnership that you and I will never, we'll know it eventually. But it's certainly not going to be revealed to us now because they've got to perpetrate the lie until it totally comes apart. And then, like I said, they'll pull back the cover and then you'll say, golly, you know, I should have realized that's what was taking place here. And we failed to witness it. Because what was Sam Walton? You know, when you think about the Walmart promise and how Walmart came to be and who Sam Walton was, he was a great American. I really believe that he was an exceptional American who did everything right. And guess what he promised us? that he would bring us American-made products. You know, I mean, and he did. He lived to that. He, if there was an American-made product, that's what he stocked in his store. And if there wasn't an American-made product, he supported people to make American-made products. And then he also, I mean, it was a last resort, and you could walk up and they point blank tell you, well, there is no American product. We don't. That you'll have to purchase this. But that was one of the great prides that he had, that he stocked all of his stores with American-made goods. And when did that leave? And nothing was ever said about it. And then what replaced it? Made in China.
Made in China under the idea, because this is what we were told. I remember I was looking at my notes of NAFTA, and what were we told? Oh, we'll be getting the same goods at a cheaper price from China, so we'll be able to produce other things in America.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, what a lie was that one.
What?
Not only are we getting Chinese-made goods that are inferior to everything that we have, everything. Things break. You spend money on it. I bring it home. It's broken in the box. It doesn't fit right. The top doesn't fit good. One screw is shorter than another. One bolt is missing. Did you ever try? We tried to put together a greenhouse. We had all the pieces laid out, except guess what? They gave us 4, 5 number threes and 3 number fours, and we need 4 of each. We never could stand for that.
Here's the thing, when you take it back, Karen, what do they give you? Another one.
Another one. Right.
And there's definitely no one that's ever going to come service what they sold you. That's non-existent. You know, I mean, used to be that if you bought an appliance or if you bought something, you could go back to the store, and that guy would break his neck to get out there and make things right for you, to make it, you know, well, here, let me, he would open a box and say, yeah, this one's got all of the pieces, but just go get you another one off the shelf and walk out the door, and when you get home, hope that it's right, but it's not going to be. You know, and here's something else, and I think about it and I laugh. You know, they got the little commercial Walmart runs, and it's got the little bouncing smiley face and lower prices. You know, the prices are falling, the prices are falling. But it never says, along with the prices, we're dropping the sizes. You know?
Yeah.
Let's have some of that. Let's have some honesty,
and
some transparency.
and on that note, a couple other quick things. Don't forget about Walmart and the amnesty, but more importantly is your final guest has arrived.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? I'm so glad to have Armando with us because he's going to bring the other side. We are seeing the results of all of these policies, and Armando is going to tell us where they all came from. So thank you for joining us this evening, Armando.
Thank you for having me.
Please tell everyone, give everyone your website, and tell everyone where they can reach you, and then let's find out where all of this destruction got started, how it got started, and what we're suffering from, but most important, what we can do about it.
Okay. Well, I'm on the board of Volution 912, and I'm also chair of the communications committee for the REC in Volusia County. And the website that we have for the Volution 912 is the Sunshine Examiner. We have, you know, a couple of articles there in volution912.org. So that's for the Volution 912. I'm going to be putting up a website sometime in the near future, you know, about some of the things that I'm doing here, because I'm out speaking to different Tea Party groups about the Frankfurt School. But basically, a lot of what we're seeing today is a result of, it's not an accident what we're dealing with. It's actually a perpetrated effort that's been done to us as a society and as a culture that goes back, you know, about 80 years. Back in somewhere in the 1920s, you know, after World War One, the communists were trying to figure out why they couldn't get communism to become well accepted. I mean, you did have the Bolshevik Revolution, but they couldn't get communism to really move as they wanted to in Europe. So they got together and they had a symposium, and it was Lenin that called that meeting. And at the it was at the Marx Engel Institute in Moscow, and he got together a bunch of German intellectuals, which were members of the Communist Party in Germany, and they sat down and they decided they were just basically started thinking about what is it that we need to do. And what they discovered was, or what they realized, or what they decided, was that they needed to, in order for communism to really take hold in any society, you had to destroy the culture of a society first. Because if you can destroy the culture, then you would have the revolution that was needed to be able to overthrow, you know, whatever society they wanted to overthrow. And they were really referring to Western society, particularly the United States. That was their target. Because they recognized, and I've got a good article here that was written by Michael Mancino in 1992 issue of the Fidelio magazine. It's entitled The Frankfurt School and Political Correctness, and this is what he wrote, because you had several members that were there. You had Felix Weil, who was the one who actually started the Frankfurt School, and you had George Lukacs, you had Willie Munzenberg, and then later on you had Max Horkheimer, who pretty much took over the Frankfurt School, and he was the one that really pushed one of their ideas, which is called critical theory. And, you know, you had a bunch of other people, and Bertrand Russell later joined the Frankfurt School. But it's interesting what he said. He said, Lukacs identified, that's George Lukacs, he was one of the founders of the Frankfurt School, he said, Lukacs identified that any political movement capable of bringing Bolshevism to the West would have to be, in his words, demonic. It would have to possess the religious power which is capable of filling the entire soul, a power that characterized primitive Christianity. However, Lukacs suggested that such a messianic political movement can only succeed when the individual believes that his or her actions are determined by not a personal destiny, but the destiny of the community, or else the collective. In a world that has been abandoned by God, Bolshevism worked in Russia because the nation was dominated by a peculiar Gnostic form of Christianity typified by the writings of Fyodor Dostoevsky. The model for the new man is Aloysia Karamazov, said Lukacs, referring to Dostoevsky's character who willingly gave his personal identity to a holy man and thus ceased to be unique, pure, and therefore abstract. So essentially, and he goes on to talk more about this, but essentially what they realized is that the West, the United States in particular, the Christian culture was what was dominated the society, and the Christian culture could not be overthrown. And there was another Marxist, Antonio Gramsci, who realized the same thing. And even though he didn't necessarily work with the Frankfurt School, because he was in prison, he was a Marxist, and they basically had the same idea that you had to destroy the culture. So, and then from there, they began to start organizing, and they established the Institute for Social Research at the University of Frankfurt, and then that was later known as the Frankfurt School. And from there, they decided to move forward, and they had a lot of different goals, you know. And
well,
as you're talking, I went to the New School for Social Research, which mm-hmm. was emulated from those in Germany mm-hmm. and brought into America in New York City.
That's right.
And that is where the majority of the teacher trainers went
right.
to get training into this liberal ideology.
Mm-hmm.
So it crossed the pond, as
That's
they
right.
say.
Yeah, because what happened was when Hitler came to power, he went after the communists. So they just packed up their bags and they came here to the United States. And that's where they landed. They landed in New York City. And they landed at Columbia University, Brandeis, University of Berkeley, and a couple other universities too that they landed in. And they just went in there and they just began to take their ideas and began to implement them into the schools. Because, see, what happened was Antonio Gramsci, he called for what's called the march through the institutions. In other words, he said, in order to destroy a society, you had to take control of the institutions of influence, so which right. are the churches, the schools, the media, television, right. Hollywood, the arts. So they went ahead and they went after those particular power centers of society, and that's where they began to start, you know, injecting their poison into the society, and then from there, it's pretty much developed over the last 50 or 60 years, particularly from the 60s, because Herbert Marcuse later came to the Frankfurt School, and he was very, very influential. He was probably one of the most influential member of the Frankfurt School, and he did a lot of, his ideas pretty much permeated through all the universities. And he came up with a lot of, he came up with the term, make love, not war. And
right.
He was the one who coined that phrase. And that's how you had the counterculture revolution that happened in the 60s. You know, really was fueled by him and others from the Frankfurt School.
Exactly. And let us never forget John Dewey, the father, quote, of modern education.
That's right.
Who was trained and followed the teachings of Gramsci.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So we had the continuation of their ideology being taught in the schools and being taught to the teachers as we began to eliminate fact-based education
right.
or value-driven emotional education.
Mm-hmm. Well, the mm-hmm. whole public school system really was designed to socialize the child. That was the whole purpose of public education. And John Dewey was the father of public education. And he believed that the child should be trained to be a willing ward of the state. That was his idea.
Remember that, folks. A willing ward of the state.
Exactly. Exactly. And Bertrand Russell wrote a lot about that, too. But it's interesting because I want to kind of go over a little bit of what the Frankfurt School's goals were and what they themselves said.
Before you do that, Armando, let us just take a moment to
sure.
remember that you are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, and on redstatetalkradio.com. Please visit our website and listen to our shows and share this information. That's the most important thing. If you get information and you don't share it, it doesn't go anyplace. So thank you all for listening. Visit our website, agenda21today.com, panhandlepatriots.com, saveamericafoundation.com, karenshone.com. Thank you, Armando. Thank you, John. Thank you, Neil and Petra. And Armando, you're up.
Okay. What they did is they pretty much made a list of what they said that they needed to achieve. And their goals were, they called for the creation of racial offenses. They called for the continual change to create confusion. They called for the teachings of sex and homosexuality to children. As a matter of fact, they established the Mattachine Society for that purpose. The undermining of schools and teachers' authority, huge immigration to destroy identity, the promotion of excessive drinking, emptying the churches, an unreliable legal system with bias against victims of crime, dependency on the state or state benefits, control and dumbing down of media, and encouraging the breakdown of the family. Now, the emptying of the churches and the breakdown of the family were the two major ones, because they knew, and even Karl Marx knew, that they were, the family was the is the pillar of society. If you destroy the family, you destroy the culture. And if you destroy the culture, if you destroy the family, you destroy the state, essentially.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And they went after that. So what they decided to do with those goals is they decided they were going to attack the authority of the father, which is where, you know, Horkheimer, he wrote the book, The Authoritarian Personality. And that's what he did, is he went after the authority of the patriarchy.
Right.
And the other thing that they did is they would deny the specific roles of father and mother. They would wrest away from families their right as primary educators of their children. They abolished differences in the education of boys and girls, all forms of male dominance. They declared women to be an oppressed class and men as oppressors. See, that's where the feminist movement
exactly right. And having lived through that, I remember saying over and over and over again, as they're doing this, they are taking away the important figurehead, the patriarch of the family, and they are diminishing the figurehead. And, you know, you could see that happening.
Sure.
And I always point to three TV shows where you can watch the way they did that, because they had to carry the message, as you said, through Hollywood. So think about Father Knows Best and the family life of Father Knows Best, and then All in the Family and the diminishing of Archie Bunker and the way he was treated, ending up with married with children, and by that time the whole family is dysfunctional, and now it's exceptional. It is acceptable to have dysfunctional families.
That's right. And see, what they did is there were two philosophical ideas that they developed. One of them was critical theory, and the other one was values clarification. And critical theory basically says that you take the things that you that are of value, you challenge all previous standards of good. So that's where they create this cultural pessimism in the society. And see, then that's when they started developing all these shows, like, you know, All in the Family, you know, and all these other shows and all the movies that came after, too, that always depicted the family as dysfunctional, as you were saying. And that, and it was all this negative criticism. And that's what critical theory is negative criticism. See? So they used that critical theory, and they just blasted it through their books. They wrote all kinds of books on different subjects, on the family, on capitalism, on just about every you know, feminism. That was another book that, you know, essentially the whole feminist movement was never about, you know, freeing the women from this oppressive male domination. It was basically to attack the male figure in the family. It had nothing to do with women's rights. And
go
ahead.
I think about how they diminished the role of motherhood. Motherhood was held in such high esteem.
That's right.
That if anybody said to you, "What do you do?" and you say, "I am a mother," you were the crown jewel, because you were the nurturing, caring for your children. And then they made it so that mom needed to go to work.
Exactly.
Mom needed to have more things. You needed to have the same things that your neighbors had. So in order to get all of those things, mom had to go to work. And then when mom started going to work, the children began to rely on the school because that's what they set up. And then we had after-school programs and after-after-school programs. And now we have breakfast, lunch, and dinner being served in schools. So the role of the family has become second to the role of the state, which is the purpose of communism.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you what, I just got had a lengthy discussion the other day with a guy, and he was decrying abortion, you know, and how we need to get over it, you know, and we should accept it, and it's ludicrous to me, but his whole thinking, you know, and the very first thing that they want to throw out of is that it's a woman's right. Well, how diminishing is it to the female? And is there, do you ever empower a woman through abortion? You know, I've never understood that. It does not make any, there's no logic. And if you can't put fact-based logic that abortion serves women. It diminishes women. It diminishes, there's nothing empowering about taking a young girl and performing an abortion. There's nothing that can be said that's good, and there's no society that will, if they accept abortion. And for whatever reason, I convince you that abortion's okay. And they did it with the free love 60s movement and everything that took place in the 60s, women's lib. That was their, one of their primary useful tools for us to accept abortion as a society. It's a woman's right. She's free to have that choice. Wow, what a great choice, huh? What a great choice. And how's that working out for us as a nation? You know, but all these things are by design, and I guess that's the one. You know, Raimondo, I have read many times and used in reference the 45 steps to communism.
That's
that
right,
were,
the 45 goals.
They read,
goals,
yeah, it,
Leon Scott,
yeah, and they were read into our congressional record.
That's
any
right.
Citizen can go right now, and you can go back and just type that in, 45 goals to a communist America, read into congressional record in 1963.
Yes.
63
right.
or 65.
It was
but
63.
The fact is, when you go in and you read that, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's completed. We're not waiting on them to finish anything, which is just to the extent.
That's right.
I'd like to throw something in here, if I may. I know Curtis Bowers. Y'all have heard his award-winning DVD, Agenda Grinding America
Down.
Yeah,
I wanted to
plug Agenda Grinding America Down and his website, www.agendadocumentary.com, and one of the emails, I think, was info@agendadocumentary.com. And they used to be around $17.99. And last I heard, I think he was giving some of them away, so I'm not sure the status of that now, but he's been promoting this for probably 3 or 4 years. It's an award-winning documentary. I hosted a Save the Nation Summit in Smith County, Tennessee, an hour from 50 miles from Nashville about 2.5 years ago, and we played it there, and the people that were in attendance were just in utter shock and they disbelief. They couldn't believe it. And so, you know, he enumerated on the same things that Armando is talking about right now, and he also had sat in on that Communist Party meeting on the campus of Berkeley, and Van Jones was there. And they were going through the list, like Armando was saying, of things that they were going to do and implement in this country culturally and socially to bring us down to a third world status so they can take over and have cultural Marxism. So
right.
here
right.
it is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I want to read some quotes from some of the members of the Frankfurt School that are very, very interesting. I just misplaced my little quotes here. Here we go. Right here. This is from Antonio Gramsci. Antonio Gramsci wrote a book called Prison Notebooks, or Prison Notebook, and he said this. He said, the civilized world has been thoroughly saturated with Christianity for 2,000 years. Any country grounded in Judeo-Christian values, now this is from his book, any country grounded in Judeo-Christian values cannot be overthrown until those roots are cut. But to cut the roots, to change culture, a long march through the institutions is necessary. Only then will power fall into our laps like a ripened fruit. He wrote that. Willie Munzenberg, who was one of the founding members of the Frankfurt Fruit School, said, "We will make the West so corrupt it stinks." Those are his exact words.
That's
and
here,
here's another example here of Herbert Marcuse. He said this. He said, "The West," and this is where he's applying critical theory, says, "The West is guilty of genocidal crimes against every civilization and culture it has encountered. American and Western civilization are the world's greatest repositories for racism, sexism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, fascism, and Nazism. American society is oppressive, evil, and undeserving of loyalty." And it's really interesting because I've heard Obama, in President Obama, in some way, shape, or form, say basically these exact words in different ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Well,
and
when,
it's just amazing, you know, because you can see that it's by design. I think that's the thing that's really important for people to really understand, you know, the listeners, is that everything that we have going on in our country right now is not an accident. It is by design. And if we can understand it, and we can begin to study what the root causes and where all these things come from, when we have conversations with family, with friends, you know, usually people that are already on the left, they're very difficult to convince. I mean, they're pretty much set. But there's people that really don't know. They're kind of like in the throes of, well, which way should I go? You know, when you deal with the actual issues, you can debate the issues because you can bring up the history. Because the reason we're even having these conversations is not because society calls for it, but it's because we were given these issues to discuss. You follow what I'm saying? And then
yes,
we were made
absolutely.
To discuss them back and forth, but we don't really know
that
what the real purpose behind this is.
They had some people that went out and sowed these seeds, and they were sown without any doubt. When you trace all of this, it had to be on the university campuses, and
it
was professors that had fled Nazi Germany. Now, that's
a
fact, folks, and you can check it out for yourself. And the links of those professors, and when we started to look at the unions and all across the formation of unions, who were the guys that went and planted the seed in the workers? Always folks from the college campuses. I mean, and it's recorded. They were arrested. So along with all of the rest in Wisconsin and the Pullman, everything that took place in Chicago when the formation of these unions were taking place, and trust me, it was socialist. It was communist that put them together. And they had their own splits, and because communists are really up front. You know, they want to forcefully do it. Do it now. Let's just do it. Socialists wanted to ease their way, and they have an underhanded way of weaving their way into a society, and they're willing to take their time.
Well, socialism, you can't implement communism directly. Communism has a predecessor, and that is socialism.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Socialism sets up the, it was either, I think it was Karl Marx, the goal of the goal of
socialism
is communism.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
Curtis Powers really says
path.
It really well. I mean, you have two words to define socialism, big government. And that sets up
exactly
that sets everything
exactly.
up so that somebody like Stalin or Lenin or Hitler can come in and take power because the system is all set up.
Socialism.
And if you think back to Joseph McCarthy, and when McCarthy, go ahead, Karen.
No, I was just going to say that is exactly what we were talking about today, and how when elected officials walk into their new office, what's left there are the same people from the predecessor. So when that elected official sits down and says, "What's this bill about?" they're going to get the ideology of the socialist of the socialist structure, because in effect they haven't changed anything. And the only way to change anything would be to wipe out all of the people and start over. But unfortunately, you have to choose ones that were not educated by the Marxist programs that are in the schools. And the other thing that I was going to say is that to go forward, the Frankfurt School has become what we know today is the Aspen Institute.
Mm-hmm.
They are one and the same.
Yeah.
They follow the same program, the
That's
same
right.
protocol. And I tell everybody, if you are unsure of a candidate, you are unsure of a person that you might want to put in office who was there before, just Google their name together with the Aspen School and see if they were an attendee, and then you will know what their ideology is about.
Well, a lot of the people that are in the Aspen Institute are also members of the CFR, or the Council on Foreign Relations. And
the
Aspen Institute is funded by, I think it's the Bill Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. I mean, that says a lot. Because
yeah.
even the Frankfurt
yeah,
School,
it does.
The Frankfurt School was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation and other foundations,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that speaks volumes right there. You know, as a matter of fact,
well, yeah.
when you go to, if you look at some of the members on Jeb Bush's website, you know, what he calls reformers, there's some people that are on his board that he calls reformers that are under boards that these people are chairs of boards and foundations that are funded by the Rockefeller Brothers Fund or the Ford Foundation or the Bill Gates Foundation, you know, because the common core, see, there's two ideas that were very big with the Frankfurt School, like I said earlier, was critical theory, and the other one was values clarification. And values clarification basically says that the object of the values clarification strategy is not to teach specific values, but to make students aware of their own personally held values and of the way in which their values compare to those of friends, adults, different groups in society, and even other societies in the same. It is hoped that as this awareness increases, students will reconsider and perhaps modify poorly founded values, while at the same time hold more confidently values which stand the test of review and comparison. So in other words, the teachers can't teach, so they have to be facilitators, but not teachers,
right.
because in the idea of values clarification, if you teach anything, that's considered indoctrination. See?
Right.
And this is what they're teaching. This is what they're teaching the teachers. And Common Core is full of this. It's full of value clarification. And you look at some of the manuals that talk about, you know, some of the approaches and the strategies. It's unbelievable, some of the stuff that they're teaching and some of the questions that they ask. You know, like, for example, I've got a copy of one of the manuals here where it says that they have to go through different processes or different stages where they ask them things like, are you proud of that? Do you really like that idea? Does that make you feel good? And then they pose questions. And here's some interesting questions that are that they're proposed.
Offer.
That they're encouraged.
Yeah.
Like one of them is, which one of these would be most difficult for you to accept? The death of a parent, the death of a sibling, the death of a spouse, or your own death? See? And here's another question. How would you break off a 3-year relationship with someone you have been dating steadily, by telephone or by mail or by person? And then here's another question.
Wow.
Which would you prefer to give up if you had to? Economic freedom, religious freedom, political freedom. See?
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And they talk about other issues. They talk about depopulation. They talk about the environmental movement. It's crazy. And then they rate them. And this is where a lot of the psychological profiling that's happening with Common Core, because they have to kind of go through a values grid. There's a values voting, and they basically are psychologically profiling our children through Common Core. Using
that,
values clarification
they're doing it through the assessments, because what's happening
clarification is the model for those assessments.
If a child answers and they don't like the way the answer is, the computer will then bring back 4 new questions.
Exactly. If you answer A, we're going to take you to this page.
Until that kid comes up with answer C, which is the one that they want, they will continue to ask questions to push that child into that evaluation.
Absolutely.
And that's why parents don't get the results of the test, huh? And that's why they can't allow that to be seen. And let me tell you something. Teachers aren't going to have access to that. Teachers are just going to be the ones that will say, okay, turn your computers on.
Now, what we were taught or what we learned, that this is the new, quote, modern education, which they called outcome-based education. The outcome is determined in advance, and a series of questions guide the human capital, which is what they call our students, into this belief pattern, and they push them towards that value. So if you are, let's say you don't believe in man-made global warming, by the time you're finished with the questioning, your head is going to be so filled up with nonsense that the only answer you'll be able to give is the one that they request, the one that they require.
Well, it's interesting because they follow a lot of, you know, Bertrand Russell's ideas, because he wrote a book called The Scientific Outlook, and here's a quote from his book. Scientific societies are as yet in their infancy. He wrote this book in 1953. It is to be expected that advances in physiology and psychology will give governments much more control over individual mentality than they now have over even in totalitarian countries. Fichte laid it down that education should aim at destroying free will, so that after pupils have left school, they should be incapable throughout the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. Diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable, and any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible. And it's really interesting that he said that last statement there, because it goes along with what a defector from the Soviet Union back in the early 70s, his name is Yuri Brezhnev. G. Edward Griffin did an interview with him in 1985 where he laid out basically what the plan of the KGB is, and essentially what Bertrand Russell here is quoting is what they call active measures of psychological subversion. And he goes into detail about how that works, and that he was saying that, you know, the KGB, most people think that espionage is what the KGB is what they do, but that's only 15% of what they do. 85% of all their money and their assets and everything that they have, they put it into what they call psychological subversion, and there's 4 stages to it. You have the demoralization stage. You have the destabilization stage, you have the crisis stage, and you have the normalization stage. And the demoralization stage, which is the first one, it takes a generation. It takes 20 years because in their mind, what they teach, and this is the stuff that they teach at the Marx Engels Institute in Moscow, they teach this to all the KGB officers, is that it takes 20 years to educate a generation into the propaganda and the mindset that they want the enemy to have. See,
right.
That's why education is so important.
So important.
Bertrand Russell really understood that.
Yes.
See, and you can see it in his writing here.
Right. In 1989, at the Governor's Conference, of which Bill Clinton was the president of the Governor's Convention, and George Bush, 41, was the president at that time, they commissioned the McReel Foundation, and Shirley McCune made the following statements to the Board of Governors about the new role of education. And she said that individualism will be replaced by collectivism.
Mm-hmm.
It is the goal of education, or the goal of the school, to train the child to work so that there is no more education. And that factual information is no longer necessary and will be replaced by value-driven education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the change went from the teacher into the classroom. Because prior to that time, I was teaching, and we were still able to teach out of the – I was using text from the early 60s and 70s when I used the textbook because I refused to use the new ones. And after Shirley did that, there were no old textbooks in school anymore. And that was when I quit teaching, because I realized that the only thing that we were teaching was how to be good little communists.
Right.
And that was a travesty for education. And
right.
Have you, we said before, John, it doesn't matter how much money you throw at education unless you throw everything in the toilet, including the books, which is the most important key, nothing is going to change.
Karen, have you had Brigitte Gabrielle on your show with That for America?
On the show,
I think so. I don't know where I've met her.
She's done a lot.
Listen,
of
I wanted to share something with you guys, and you just run this across your thinking. If this is done, you know, and we can say how far along we are with all of this process, because it has been by design, and we know that it fully implemented in the education system in 1965. I mean, that was its date. So we're 50 years into this. And we ask ourselves when we go to these patriotic meetings and we see the Tea Party people and we see all the people that are energized and fighting for restoration of what they know they're losing. You know, they've got it, the older folks. But you never see, you know, these crowds of people and groups of people that are willing to do this are 50, 60 years old. And then you ask yourself, where are the people that are 30, the 25-year-olds? And everyone always says, well, no, it's apathy. It's not apathy.
No.
They've fully been indoctrinated. They're numb to it all.
That's right.
That's right.
One of the things that I think is really important for Americans to really understand is that the biggest enemy to Marxism is not, you know, the capitalism, it's not the economic issues, and it's not even, you know, Republican or Democratic issues. It's biblical Christianity. And that's the
there
thing
you
that
go.
People really need to understand, because that,
amen,
if they destroy that and they can take us away from our faith and from our biblical
yes.
roots, they will destroy
yep.
the society. Because the Declaration of Independence was based on that moral code, and so was the Constitution. And our
yep.
founders, they were very religious people. And they understood that, you know, liberty is morality, I mean, is freedom with morality. Because you can't have freedom without morality.
Right.
You know,
that's
but I think that's really the most. If we're gonna deal with anything, we have to really realize that when you see, you know, like when you look at what, you know, the left does, you know, particularly during elections or really any time, but you really see it during the election times. What they go after are the social issues. That is what's big to them.
Mm-hmm.
They silence the right.
Sure.
And then the right, you know, pretty much tie their own hands, because they say, oh, no, we can't talk about socialism because that's going to make everybody mad. But they don't realize that it's the social issues that it's real. What it's really going towards is our Christian roots, our biblical Christian roots, and that's what they attack when they deal with the social issues. And when we back off from that, we're essentially surrendering our ideals to the left, and we're already losing the battle at that point. And that's where we need to recognize it. That's where we need to get strong. That's what we need to stand up for. That's what we need to stand up and say, no, the truth is the truth. Right is right, and we can take our Christian values and not be afraid of them, not compromise them, not hide them. You know, we really need to protect that in our society, because that is the biggest weapon that we have.
Absolutely.
You look at our founders.
An interesting thing was just mentioned on one of the shows I was listening to, and they are so right, and it is so true. We are being attacked, you're right, especially let's just even take a look about Christmas or the word God.
Right.
And yet every group that stood up and said, no, I'm not doing that, was
they were
successful.
Labeled a racist, they were labeled
they
a homophobe, they were labeled all kinds of stuff. And
right.
That's critical
God,
theory in
the
action
end,
right there, because that's what they want to destroy.
Exactly.
That is their enemy.
That is their enemy. But in
that
the end,
is their enemy.
Those people that stood up were successful.
That's
right. The problem. If you stand up, if you say no, if you say I'm not doing that, if you say God is staying there, I'm going to say the morning prayer or a prayer or a moment of silence. We're going to use the word Christmas. Every time that's done, it's successful.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to get our people to understand.
Right.
That they can stand up.
That's
and
right.
That they can
That's right. And it's by design. Yeah, I have another quote from another book. It's called Towards Soviet America. And this was written by William Z. Foster, who ran for president of the United States back in 1933. And he wrote this in his book. He said, among the elementary measures the American Soviet government will adopt to further the Cultural Revolution are the following. The schools, colleges, and universities will be coordinated and grouped under the National Department of Education. This was written in 1933. And its state and local branches. The studies will be revolutionized, being cleansed of religious, patriotic, and other features of the bourgeois ideology. The students will be taught on the basis of Marxian dialectical materialism, internationalism, and the general ethics of the new socialist society. Present obsolete methods of teaching will be superseded by a scientific pedagogy. The churches will remain free to continue their services, but their special tax and other privileges will be liquidated. Their buildings will revert to the state. Religious schools will be abolished and organized religious training for minors prohibited. Freedom will be established for anti-religious propaganda. And it goes on. It's, you know, so that, you know, that tells you right there that they recognize that as the enemy. And that's why, you know, Antonio Gramsci said that, you know, Christianity's been saturated in the Western culture for 2,000 years, and the only way to destroy Western culture is to cut the roots.
See? Yeah.
And that's...
And they have, huh? I mean, and that's what...
Exactly
I
right.
guess there was... Two years ago, I went to a school board, and it was over an issue, and it was just over how they were allowing the public to have access to public school facilities. And we had Hurricane Rita come through and devastate our part of the country, and we actually had a small church in a rural area that was totally destroyed, and the school board for a time was allowing them to use a school for their services on Sunday. And then it came to be and came to pass that after a time they decided they wanted to shift that policy and change it because someone had come to them about would they be open to and allow some Muslim people to be able to use a public facility for a mosque.
Mm-hmm.
And out of their fear, they wanted to do away with any allowing anybody, any Christian organization or anything, to use public school facilities. So in my battle, I went in and I started to look. What was the intent of the founders and what was their design for public education? And trust me, they did have a design for public education.
They sure did.
And the largest push was Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin was a huge advocate that we had to have an educated citizen base. But he was also the largest advocate that we spell out what our children and our citizens must learn, and he laid it out in three very specific steps, and it had to be in an order, and he was specific about it. He didn't leave anything to chance that someone would interpret his meaning on down in the future. He wrote it very plainly. Number one, we have to teach our citizens religion.
That's right.
Number two, we have to teach our citizens morality.
Mm-hmm.
And third and lastly, we will teach them the science and knowledge.
Right.
That was it. Those are the three things. And when I read this to a school board, they told me, well, there's no way that we can teach religion in our public school.
Yeah,
I said,
they were spitting out that green stuff from the mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's interesting.
Benjamin Rush,
know who Benjamin Rush is, right? He's one of our founders.
Yes.
He's the father. Yes. He's considered the father of medicine. But he wrote this. He said, the only foundation for a useful education in a republic is to be aid in religion. Without this, there can be no virtue, and without virtue, there can be no liberty. And liberty is the object and life of all republican governments. Without religion, I believe that learning does real mischief to the morals and principles of mankind.
Wow.
Benjamin
and where are our people that are our moral compass and our leaders, our Christian leaders? You know, the guy that stands in a pulpit.
That's right.
Somewhere around this country every Sunday, where are these men when we know the evils that have gripped this nation, that allow this communist root to weave its way into our society? Where are those people? Where are they today standing up? They should be the leaders of
this
patriotic
movement.
They're
not standing up, and that's the problem. And there's a lot of different reasons why they won't, but they should be.
They are mostly taught the political correctness, Armando said, and when you are taught that from the time you're in kindergarten to by the time you finish high school, and all you learn is political correctness, then by the time you're in high school, this is all you know, and right, John, it's not apathy, it's lack of knowledge.
Right.
And lack of the truth.
That makes
the society turn their head as they're taught that the government has all the answers. Mm-hmm. Shut up, go in your corner, don't say anything, and the government will do it for you. Mm-hmm. And this is what the kids have been taught. 87% of our kids today graduate high school thinking the government is there to take care of them.
That's right. That's
87%.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That is horrible.
That's right.
Horrible.
Yeah,
it is.
And
so how do you reach them, you know?
Well, you know, I think that it's important that, you know, if anybody has access to, you know, young Republican clubs or has access to teenage Republicans or, you know, young organizations, you know, we can go in and we can just start speaking to these kids. I mean, we here in Volusia County, we have TARS, which is Teenage Republicans, and I spoke with them about some of these things, and they were absolutely blown away by some of the stuff that's like, you know, Civics 101. That they just ate it all up, and they think.
And I think they will.
Yeah, they do.
And
they didn't know things like very basic stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
They didn't know that things like what Patrick Henry said, that, you know, it is when people forget God that tyrants forge their chains. You know?
Right.
And no one brings it to them
said,
in
those
real...
people who will not be governed by God will be ruled by tyrants. And then something as basic
as the difference
between a republic and a democracy, they didn't even know. that there was a, that our country was even a republic. You know,
right.
Well, I mean,
you're
because
right.
Listen, everything you see on TV, I don't care if you watch Fox or who you watch
right.
or whatever, every politician, Republicans, I don't care, they
that's
all
right.
refer to us as a democracy.
That's right.
One of the first things they give in their little speeches,
that's
you know,
right.
the survival of the democracy. Well, wait a while, when did that happen? You know, that's not what we were given. That's not what we were guaranteed. We have
that's
a
right.
guarantee, a constitutional guarantee. So if they don't get those, but I think that the thing here, and I think you hit it, we as, I guess, the elders of society, we can't leave it to the pulpit. We can't leave it to the corrupted teachers.
That's right.
And not that I'm not talking, and I want to be clear about that. I'm not saying there's anything bad with our teachers, but they've been, most of them, the young folks that are teaching have been indoctrinated already themselves. They've come out of corrupted universities.
That's right.
So they've accepted this, and they're going to fight for whatever it is that looks like a job. They're in there for a J-O-B.
That's right. That's
right. But I'm talking now as principled senior citizens with fact-based understanding of your constitution, of your religious background, of your Christian morality. If you have that, then you need to find some way to educate the children.
That's right.
Because if we don't, it's not going to – look, the one thing these socialists and the people, the communists that have an intent and a design on this global structure and the destruction of America, the one thing they have an understanding of is that we are 50 to 60 years old, 70 and 80 years old, and they're waiting on us to die.
Exactly.
They will allow us to pass away from this earth, and guess what they will have? They will have
our
their
children.
Vision fulfilled.
That's right.
That's it. They've got our babies. And I'm not giving them mine. Not,
that's right.
Not without
I'm
a battle.
I'm not doing that either.
And the battle
really
is in the education process.
That's right. And I think it's really important that if there's parents out there listening, or if there's grandparents out there listening, that they can take the responsibility of teaching their children the truth. Because it's all out there.
Yes.
It's not like, you know, it's
their job.
In some, you know, Tea Party book that you find, you know,
no.
somewhere in some 912 or Patriot group. I mean, this is documented information. I mean, this is our founders
yep.
said this. You can find it anywhere in any reliable.
There's great resources to teach it.
That's right. You know, and if the parents themselves feel like they don't know, well, they need to begin to learn. They need to understand.
Absolutely.
Our system
yeah,
of
make
government,
them come with them.
They need to understand our founding. They need to understand their faith. They need to really grasp that. And, you know, George Washington relied on divine providence. And parents
absolutely.
Can rely on divine providence.
Yeah.
We can rely
yeah.
on divine providence.
Divine providence. Exactly.
You know, that
sure.
God can and will help us if we let him. And he will. You know?
That is exactly
yeah.
right. And therefore, folks, on that note, as a solution, homeschool your kids.
Absolutely.
Get them out of these government indoctrination prisons, because that's the only thing that's happening. You had children, and they are your responsibility. They are not the responsibility of the state to force your child into some little box that's going to make them the same as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We are individuals, and that's the greatness of America, is that individuals doing great things create the best. And that's what we used
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, but, you know, Karen, listen, I want to, because, you know, I have made the same statement you're making now. And I had a young man come up to me, and I guess, I don't know, it's been a month or two back, and I don't even know what. He was just standing in the background listening to me talk to some folks about homeschooling. And he said, hey, bud, and he came up to me. He says, hey, bud, he goes, me and my wife, if we don't work, my kids don't eat. How do you expect me to homeschool my children? Well, I have to hold a job, and my wife has to hold a job, and he says, I take all the extra work I can get. Where are we
okay.
going to be able to homeschool our children so they don't have
there.
The wherewithal? And here, there's a design to that, too, I say.
There is,
well, see, here's
every
the thing that people need to understand about that.
Every community has homeschoolers somewhere. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing wrong with homeschooling a couple of kids. So if you're a homeschooler mm-hmm. and there are other kids on your block, there's nothing wrong with expanding your knowledge to them too.
Exactly.
We know people have to work, but we've got to work together.
Yeah,
that's
taking
right.
back our country
okay.
doesn't
right.
mean, you know, I'm going to put my head
so
in the sand because I've got a hard thing to do.
Right. And here's the thing that's important for parents to understand also is that what makes them think that they have to only rely on their own capabilities? Couldn't people turn to the Lord and say, Lord, I know. See, our lives, and this is just basic reality, our lives are built on a system of priorities. And if we
mm-hmm.
prioritize those things that are truly priority, and we see that
yes.
the system is against us or things work against us, why can't we call out to the Lord and say, Lord, I need you, help me. I want to homeschool my child, but I can't because I got bills to pay or this or that. Why can't we turn
mm-hmm.
and let God work miracles in our lives and change mm-hmm. things around? I think the Lord would be pleased for us to call. I think he's waiting for people to say, look, I can turn your life around. If I can raise people from the dead, if I can make people walk, and if I can make the blind see, I certainly can change your circumstances to make it possible for you to homeschool. You see what I mean?
Wow.
I think what happens
Absolutely.
Is that we've been trained to think that all we have to rely just on our own power. See, if our founders
mm-hmm.
thought the same thing, we would have lost the Revolutionary War. The
yeah.
thing that made them win the Revolutionary War was their reliance
and
on divine providence.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, I think so much of – go ahead, Karen.
There's nothing wrong with going to your church and soliciting assistance
How
in the
great
church.
Would that be,
I'm
huh?
sure
Absolutely.
That there are retired
Absolutely.
Teachers. I'm sure that there are homeschoolers.
Yep.
I'm sure
yep.
that, and like you said, John, what do we have when we all work together? Homeschool co-ops.
Right.
One parent works.
Yeah.
Another parent takes homeschooling jobs. Nothing is more important than the truth and getting our children immersed in the truth.
That's
and
right.
nobody's going to
yeah.
do it better than we will.
That's right. And the thing that's important for people to understand also for listeners is that who is going to have the most impact on the minds of our children? Isn't it going to be those who are exposed the most to them? If the
that's,
school
yeah.
system is the greatest influence on our children more than our parents, where are our children going to gravitate towards? See?
Oh, sure.
And, you know, that's a function, too. Listen, we establish then and we reestablish the reality of what our founders gave us. When they gave us a representative form of government, and we all go, and I've heard so much whining, you see all the signs, you know, limited government, bring it. Here's the thing. We start at the root, the locality, your
right.
local community,
mm-hmm.
and you start to restore the truth of what a republic looks like.
Right.
We work together in our community without reliance on government to where the guy in the state level, we're not asking him to go beg government or the federal government for any kind of education dollars. We're taking care of it on the local community
That's
level.
Right.
We find a way with the help of God, with the help of each other.
That's
we
right.
restore our faith in each other.
That's
we
right.
restore our humanity,
Very
our morality.
Well,
what a great America, huh?
Amen.
Isn't that who we are as a people?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's
well,
who we are.
As much as I hate to say this, we are coming to the top of the hour.
Oh, yes, we are.
And
yep.
It's going to be time to, now it's time to say goodnight to all our family. And I shouldn't quit my day job and try to get a job singing because that will never happen.
Oh, you were singing?
Oh, yeah, that's John. Thank you. Armando, tell everyone where they can find you. I know you do. I love you, too. Armando, tell everyone where they can find you at your website.
They could find, if they want to reach me directly, they can reach me on my Tales of Waterville website. because I produce a show called Tales of Water, which is an animated show for children that's based on Christian values. You know, it's based on, we have DVDs that we sell. We have shows on attitude, behavior, you know, caring, determination. We only have two DVDs at this point, but, you know, we kind of teach, character building lessons. And if you go to our website, talesofwaterville.com, and just click on the email there, you can reach me directly.
Spell it for everyone.
Excellent.
Talesofwaterville.com.
I'd like to book
That's
you for
great.
Some shows, Armando. I book people on shows all around the country, and I book with a lot of pastors. I work with a lot of ministries that are politically proactive.
Mm-hmm.
We will get Patra connected to you, Armando, at the end of the show. Patra, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And
why don't you
tell everyone where they can reach you, because Patra does a wonderful job of helping myself get wonder and John. We get wonderful guests, and I've been on a lot of Patra's shows as well. So where can people find you, Patra?
Really, they can email me at Brave. My company's Brave Hill Productions, and just email me at brave.hillproductions@yahoo.com, brave.hillproductions@yahoo.com, and I do have an extensive profile of work I've done and articles I've written in poetry and things like that on LinkedIn. And I've been booking people for around the country for radio shows all across the country for 2 years straight. I book a lot of people, been on Fox News, all spans of life, high-ranking retired military, law enforcement, ministers, actors, musicians, attorneys, professors, you name it. I book everybody under the sun, and a lot of people have been on Fox. So it's very challenging.
Remarkable job, and we thank you very, very much. And Neil, are you still with us? Neil can be reached at info@agenda21today.com, and we wish all of you a very Merry Christmas. I'm saying words. Merry Christmas. And a happy Hanukkah, because now is Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're up
That's
to
it.
The fourth day. And I'll tell you a real short story. When I was married to my first husband, who was not Jewish, and it was Hanukkah, I told him that in 8 days, every day, I had to have a present. It was wonderful.
Good for you, Karen.
Hey,
God bless everyone, and God bless America, folks, because we are up against the hard line there. God bless everybody, and thank you so much for sharing time with us.
Yes, thank you all. Have a wonderful evening. This is Karen Schoen and John Estabrooks, and you've been listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on Red State Talk Radio. Please tune in. Please share our show. Share our website, agenda21today.com. Have a very Merry Christmas. God bless you, and God bless America.